coming up on Beef Boys.
And again, am I talking about a delicious RuneScape character or an easy to eat?
Yeah.
Delicious.
Bug. Dude, I've had this gnat all day. Dude, this gnat, I'm sorry.
Make your own Cleveland Brown.
And the Family Guy MMO launched. The inflation rate has gone up substantially, which means you can't just stand and say buying GF 10K
buying
anymore.
GF.
It's at least 25K. But if you were to-
Welcome back to Beef Boys, the show with hot questions and even hotter boys. I'm joined today by the enigmatic Josh Strife Hayes. You might know him from his myriad of channels, including Josh Strife Hayes, his MMO content channel, Josh Strife Plays, his general gaming review channel, Josh Strife Says, his Twitch Clips channel, and Josh Strife Maze, his channel where he reviews different cornfields. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Josh Strife Gaze.
I'm going to be honest, so far the slow acceptance of the Maze channel is somewhat depressing me, and I was trying to hope that you wouldn't mention that that's not as successful as the other ones, but thank you very much for having me on the show. I'm looking forward to talking about all the things that you want to talk about, and I appreciate the fact that you're holding a mug as well. I like to think you're doing that for me.
It's 8 a.m.
I don't have a mug.
Wait, what the fuck?
Thank you, everyone, by the way, for being up at 8 in the morning to facilitate the podcast.
It's the classic British guest meme because I can't convince these three guys to wake up at 4 a.m., which I suppose is fair. Anyway, Josh, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Let us talk.
Thank you so much.
Not a problem, guys. I've been playing some video games all day, and it's nice to take a bit of a break and just have a cup of tea and chat for a bit. So I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm happy to talk about games, and I'm happy to go off on random tangents.
I have a really pertinent question, personally, for Josh.
Yes. Oh, it's pertinent as hell.
Josh, how do you feel about the song Live to Win by Paul Stanley?
You know when you set a song as your alarm tone on your phone, and after about 6 months of having it as your alarm tone, you hate it, and every time you hear it out in public, it just annoys you. That didn't happen. Yeah. And I think that says a lot about that song for me. Every time I hear it, I'm like, I need to get up and do stuff, even if I'm already awake.
Yeah,
it kind of is a really powerful song.
It's just done well. I'm happy with it.
Do you reckon that could get you up for an 8 a.m. podcast?
If God came in and started
provided it's between 3 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe. All right. Busy at any other time. No.
And if he has tea.
I'm British, so we have to legally bring tea over to America whenever we do anything. We tried it a couple of years ago. You guys didn't like it.
And we legally need to dump it in the ocean.
Yeah, keep trying.
It's tradition.
Technically, the ocean is now the world's weakest cup of tea.
That is true.
Yeah. I like the idea that like people in America who enjoy tea are just constantly at odds. The tea gets imported and then there's immediately a bunch of guys at the docks throwing it into the water.
No, guys!
There's just dock walkers running around with guns and tasers trying to stop them.
Yeah, the PG and Yorkshire tea invasion of America is going slowly, but we have faith it'll keep going. There's enough caffeine to keep everyone trying.
Yeah. Eventually, it'll overrun our water sources and from the inside out corrupt us.
Yeah, we're playing the long game. We're playing the long game. Eventually, there'll be enough tea in the ocean that you'll turn the tap on, you'll drink a cup of water, and then you'll look down and suddenly you're dressed in, you know, British regalia and you have a really strong urge for crumpets and to go and watch Mr.
Those
Bean.
Those white corn rolls on that the judges wear.
Those are more like cornrows
because they're like thick corn on the cob ass fucking curls.
Yeah, they are really thick cornrows.
I like the idea they just all become like 2000s white wannabe gangsters. They just have
they become what's that dude's name? Fucking Lil Bow Wow.
Yeah.
He's like a Nickelodeon show.
Do you reckon on that note, has anyone ever done a sketch where it's like there's a guy at like a party or whatever and he pulls out like a little baggie, but it's got tea leaves in it.
Tea leaves. Just Earl Grey.
Yeah, he's like a British guy at a party and he's like, yo, come outside, boys. And he pulls out the bag and pours it into a cup.
He's got a little kettle.
That sounds like a Key and Peele sketch. It sounds like anyone else would do it, it wouldn't
I've
be funny, but
stuff.
Key and Peele could actually nail it.
Yeah.
I mean, that work. You're all joking about this. I have to go and rearrange the kitchen and send some small plastic bags back if it's the joke. I thought that was just how we transported tea.
Oh, yeah.
Shit, lads, they're on to us.
Oh, yeah, they do kind of already come in little dime bags of tea. That's the original dime bag.
Believe it or not, that was actually, you're about to have some tea fact-based anecdotes.
Some tea?
Okay.
That was actually a mistake, genuinely. The tea was sent back from, I believe, India in about 1700s, and it was sent in a small silken bag. And the idea was that the bag be open and the tea leaves be brewed, but the guy that got it didn't realize that was meant to happen, so just put the whole bag in hot water. Liked it so much. I'm like, hey, send all those tea bags over. And so, the design of the tea bag was a mistake, but we rolled with it, like most British things.
Right. Oh, this works.
What is this country? Like, it's ours now. Shit. Yeah.
I guess we should get a king.
I love the idea that England's just falling upwards constantly. Should probably set something
up. Yeah, it really is.
Josh, who's your favorite king in the history of the... Or queen?
In, like, the history of all kings, are we including, like, video games? Are we including, like, chess?
Only ones that have seen British jewels of the British Empire.
I want to hear both. The ritual in the Tower of Babel and real queen. Okay.
Yeah. Favorite fictional and kings. Real king.
See, the thing is that British people, we don't actually know. We have a lot of history, but we don't know much of it going back beyond about 2002. Before then, everything is pretty
unlike
much
America,
ancient.
Who has very good history taught in their high schools.
Yeah, we go back to 2001.
Yeah,
very specifically, day in 2001.
Yeah,
my first memory was who won Best Kiss Award at the Teen Choice Awards. Kirsten Dunst and Tobey Maguire.
9/11.
9/11.
My first memory was seeing smoke from about 50 miles away on the horizon. Coming from New York City.
Oh yeah, you were
big
there for
squares
that,
in the sky.
My dad missed work that day, or he would have blown up.
That is fucking insane.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
No, I'd say that I quite like King Henry. He was quite cool.
That was gonna be my answer.
Is that the one that killed seven of his wives and then like the
Henry
eighth?
Henry VIII. Yeah, he got married, decided he wasn't too keen on it, and the church went, "Nah, you can't divorce." So he went, "Well, I'll make my own church," and genuinely did. That's why
Church
of England
exists.
Yeah, he couldn't get divorced because of the rules, so he made his entire own church, which is apparently a thing a king can do. I didn't realize that. We're all hoping Charles does it just for a laugh at some point.
he gets rid of Scientology.
Church of England too. Let's make it happen.
What if Charles gets divorced and like the woman he divorces just gets 50% of the British Empire and she like starts country.
Charles is like 90 years old, so if he gets divorced, I'm not sure he could survive it too well. Yeah. But I mean, if you get half the British Empire, we'll just saw it in half. They can have Scotland and Ireland. There's been a long argument about who owns them anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, the British Empire isn't quite
signing
as...
a prenup for the British Empire is really funny. just like making sure we forgot
Lincolnshire. She got it.
Fuck. There's this patriotic idea the British Empire is still massive, but honestly, it's like three small towns in a field. That's pretty much it. That's all we've got left. There's a couple of cafes, there's a restaurant, I think somewhere there's a Greg's. That's about it.
Josh, is there a reason, I've wondered this my whole life, is there a reason that you guys conquered the entire world and then just left Wales in this like tiny, indefensible piece of shit right next to you guys? And they got to be their own country?
Yeah, we pretty much just ignored it for a while, and we got too focused on everything else. It was a pretty big invasion plan, and then we forgot about them. It's almost like if you're playing Civilization and you forget about the guy that starts next to you, and then at the end you scroll the camera left, and you're like, wait, what, fuck? You've been building that the whole time, and then you lose.
How'd you guys build the pyramids?
You forgot about Gandhi, and then he has nukes by fucking 1950, and you're
genuine historical story about World War I and World War II. Actual British comedy.
Yes.
So there's England, there's Scotland, and then in between England and Scotland, there's a small village called Berwick-upon-Tweed. Now, the actual ownership of Berwick-upon-Tweed, whether it's English or Scottish, has been under debate for years and years and years. But when World War I started, the Declaration of War read, England, Scotland, and the village of Berwick-upon-Tweed have declared war against Russia.
And it's like,
going to war!
Well, the problem was when World War I finished, the end of war declaration only said England and Scotland. So about 60 years later, the mistake was corrected, and the mayor of Berwick-upon-Tweed gave a speech. He walked out onto this tiny little wooden stage and said, "The Russians can sleep safely in their beds. Berwick-upon-Tweed have pulled out of the war."
It's like in an MMO where that's like you've got epic. The factions you're at war with that you like don't have reputation with. Like if a German went to Beric von Tweed, he just starts aggroing the whole town.
They just forgot that it happened for a bit. But I think that's very quintessentially British. A lot happened, we forgot a lot, and now we're a lot smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think if I was dressed like this in where Beric upon Tweed sits now, like 200 years ago, they would have named it James upon Polyester
right now, they'd actually nominate you king. That's how it works. If you were to turn up right now, they'd make you at least
when they
a
see these things?
Or if you do that, the police are going to get their little truncheons out, and then we're going to have to call the helicopter.
They can't, this is a laser. This is a ray gun. No one can stop that.
Like, guys, I'm the king of this town. You can't,
this is now
me
James
king.
Upon cowboy hat.
And we're going to war with Russia again.
James upon
the Russians are not sleeping.
They're not
the
sleeping soundly.
Decree. It's at war.
with a country that no one even knows about because it's like 300 years ago. There's been a few times like that, isn't there? There's been like random islands that, you know, declared war as part of World War One or Two, or even like Vietnam or whatever. And then like you say, the end of war declaration just misses it because it's some random island that technically like the US or whoever has sovereignty over, but like it means that they are still technically at war.
There's an actual old oil rig drilling platform just off the English coast, and someone bought it and declared it an independent principality. And it's called Sealand, and you can buy one of those, you know, become a knight of Sealand, a lord of Sealand. The thing is, you can actually go and visit it. It's just an oil drilling platform in the middle of the sea. See it from one of the coasts. It's tiny, and they've got their own currency, and their Pikachu is on their currency from Pokemon. pop over and see it.
Yes. You guys got Sealand, and then you got that other Pokemon guy that bought that little piece of shit island off the coast of Scotland, and he's
Yuri Geller.
Einstein like pondered his nuts there some shit like 50 years ago.
Whatever
Kudos talked about that one time.
Yeah, go watch my stupid video on it. Yeah, no, Yuri Geller bought a fucking whole ass island off the Scottish coast that like he buried an orb that Einstein it was like a mystical orb that Einstein owned, which is so like it's so funny because Einstein seems like such a figure of like math and science, and then he just had a mystical
he had a mystical orb
unrelated to like his entire ethos. He also just had one he's allowed one spiritual item, and he chose a mystical orb.
You'd think he would have seen what the Manhattan Project would have wrought if he just looked into that mystical orb. And maybe he wouldn't have helped them.
It is kind of a funny thought like, to cool. think
nah,
of.
Nah, that's going to fuck up a lot of stuff. Let's just not put like my orb
It turned people into shadows. Shit.
Einstein was just like a total crystal.
He couldn't use it.
Like,
he just wanted it so somebody else couldn't have it. Like there was a wizard just on the horizon, and he's like, "No, you're not having this.
You're
I'm keeping this.
My orb.
Only I get to look at it."
Mommy said I played the orb.
It's my
and
turn
then the
to
guy
play
that
the
bends
orb.
Spoons with his mind and plays Pokemon got a hold of it somehow.
Yeah. Oh yeah, actually, James,
life all went downhill.
James, give us a Albert Einstein finding the crystal orb. Nothing.
He called Kim Possible.
Josh, let's talk about video games for 2 hours straight. What video games?
What is your favorite? Favorite video game?
Where are they? Where did they all go?
I'm going on your question, Kudos, of what video games? Just in general.
Yeah, what is the beginning of time?
Soundtracks while crossing your arm.
What's your favorite British video game retailer? Is it Game?
I'm going to be honest, mate. That's pretty much all we've got. Like, we had a company called GameStation. Turns out they were owned by Game anyway, so it was just like the illusion of competition. It was just a monopoly. And then GameStation shut down. So far, the English game sellers are Game and Argos. That's about it.
You can't go down to Tesco's and pick up World of Warcraft expansion.
I mean, you
things.
Can go to Tesco's, but no one's buying video games in Tesco's. Like, whenever you walk into Tesco's, there is like a wall of video games. Yeah. And I walk up and I'm like, Halo 2, You should probably update your wall of video games. No one's buying games from Tesco's, but you can.
That's kind of cool.
But no, game is pretty solid. You walk in, they've got some board games, they've got some actual video games, they've got some card games. Pretty much every type of game you want, really.
Yeah, that's it.
Do they have movies?
Yeah, we do live in a blessed time. The video games.
They don't have movies though, because it's fucking stupid. Have you noticed that? Like,
do they have any epic video game merch? Like GameStop?
Do they have video game merch? I think they have a Sonic keyring. That's about it.
Okay.
Just one. No one's bought it for like 50 years.
They have to share it.
Yeah.
You buy a timeshare and
it's
Sonic
just a tourist
keyring.
Attraction. Yeah. It just brings you in to have a look at it.
Well, I don't know about you, but I've noticed all the, this might be the same in your guys' beautiful countries, but all the EB games here, which are our GameStops, all games, they're pretty much pivoted to merch because no one fucking buys physical games anymore. Like they have
GameStop consoles.
They've got the most piss poor PC selection you've ever seen because everyone just buys shit on Steam these days. And then, now they're like, oh, we're all like merch and like, you know, really shit, like Funko Pop plastic type beat.
Yeah, dude, GameStop's, it's just like a wall of Funko Pops and then some of the worst t-shirts you've ever seen in your life.
Why have one life when I can have many?
There's Rick and Morty, but they're in Pulp Fiction.
Rick and Morty, but with the Master Chief suit.
Shit like that. Where you're like,
epic.
I don't want to wear this.
I'm pretty sure to like, if you were the stockist for, you know, like EB Games, they make sure you've got a Reddit account with over 100,000 karma.
You got to walk in, you got to go like this, and then they'll know that you're trying to buy a t-shirt.
M'lady?
Like, oh, this guy knows what's up.
Boy, I've got just the shirt for you.
Oh, actually, completely unrelated, but super related. That just kicked a memory into my fucking fat noggin. Did you guys ever have a game that your parents like forbid you for playing, but for like really arbitrary reasons? Because I was remembering
the list is...
I'm sure you had a very... So probably the most arbitrary...
Yeah, Andrew wasn't allowed to play like Parappa the Rapper.
But I remember there was this one game I played on like a demo disc on like the original Xbox. I can't remember the name of it, but it was this like game with this really cool slow-mo Max Payne style. Like you could jump and dive, and you're like a guy who's like going to kill like drug cartel guys who are like you know, making drugs and shit. It was something stupid like that. But I remember it was just this really badass action game, like, you know, 2005-ish era, like Xbox original type beat. I remember I asked Dad for the full thing because it was so much fun, and he said no, and he was probably just saying no because he didn't want to buy me a game, or it might have been like R16 or something, but instead of just saying that, he was like, oh, well, I don't really like encouraging that because, you know, the people in people who are doing the stuff that you're killing, even though they're doing bad things like making drugs, they might just be doing it to support their families. And I'm like, and my dad has never made that argument before.
Yeah, this isn't
his time for the most based reason for not allowing your kid to play a video game I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, he's not wrong, but it was just really weird. And again, like,
drug dealers are people too.
He's just bought me so many other games that like have had similar or worse things. Like, he bought me Fable when I was like 9 or 10, and he didn't have me being like, oh, those villagers you're killing, they've got families. Like, it was just such a weird reason that he's never...
But in that game, there's a moral. There's like a moral rating.
I
actually had a very similar experience. It honestly might be the exact same game, because for the Xbox original also, I was probably like 4 or 5, maybe like circa 2002, and it was also a cool action game that was like Max Payne before Max Payne. Mm. And I just remember this one level where it's like you're in a shipyard full of shipping containers and it's like semi-flooded, and it was the first game I saw with red explodable barrels in it, and I was going sicko mode on that shit. I was playing a bunch of games like Halo and everything by that point. Like, ratings didn't really matter to my, you know, my parents were gamers, so but for some reason I think I was just like addicted to it. They took away this game and they hid it from me, and they said I only couldn't play it for like I couldn't play it for a week, but then they lost it. And at that point, it was like my favorite game in my life.
Yeah.
And it's like going on 20 years now that once a month I'll think of this game just out of the blue, and I can't I've never been able to find what game it is. And it's like, it's so painful. Like torture. But they took it away from me, like, oh, you shouldn't be playing violent. And then they like let me play Halo and SmackDown.
Those barrels are just trying to support their family.
Like, it's like, I'm 5 years old. I can't get a gun, but if you let me play SmackDown, I broke a kid's neck giving him the Tombstone Piledriver in like third grade. So it's like you probably shouldn't have let
me
play
child.
That one. Yeah. I really did. I tombstoned my friend and broke his neck. It was it's fucked up.
That's awesome.
Dude, what?
He's in a wheelchair.
I swear to God.
Yeah, he's still
what happened
in a wheelchair.
To him? I'm invested in this. What happened to him?
What's his story?
I was really into the WWE when I was a little kid, and we were in his basement, and he had like one of those big support beams, and he was really short. So he was like Rey Mysterio, and he would like run around the and my my favorite wrestler was the Undertaker.
Okay.
So he would run and jump around the support beam and like swing around it and do like the 619 kick on me, and then I was like and the Undertaker's thing is he turns you upside down and like drops under the ground, but I didn't realize obviously that. The people's head are above his knees, so like his knees hit the ground. So I just gave it. He gave me the 619, and then I gave him the pile driver. But his head just hit the concrete basement floor, and he broke his neck.
Jesus! He just had like the Mortal Kombat like zoom in on his neck, and it.
He just had to wear one of those big cartoon neck braces for like 5 months.
Coming to school the next day with a big marshmallow around his neck.
Yeah.
I'm way mysterious.
Shout out my boy Andrew.
Josh, do you have any arbitrary game banishment stories?
No, my parents were annoyingly supportive in my gaming career and it very hard to rebel in any way. So I would walk up and I'm like, Mom, I'm going to play Manhunt. And she's like, okay, dear, have fun.
Mommy, please let me play Manhunt.
Yeah, well, she's like, here you go. And I'd say, well, fine, I'm going to go and listen to Slipknot. And she's like, okay, cool, it's on the radio, enjoy it. And I'm like, Mother, you're making it very hard to have a rebellious phase. Because you're just
supportive
of
everything I do.
No! Whenever I said, hey, I want to go and play this game, and she's like, yeah, that's fine, just play the game, understand that it's fake. Yeah. And I played the kind of really violent games for a bit. And after about an hour, I thought, yeah, these are really violent, but they're also really bad games. So I'm going to go back to just playing like SSX Tricky or, Parappa the Rapper for a bit or just something else on the PlayStation 1. And my mum or dad would walk up to him and be like, you know, where's the really violent game you got? And I'm like, well, honestly, once the novelty of the blood has worn off, the gameplay is lacking and it's just... And they were looking at me like I was eight at the time. And they're like, what do you mean the gameplay is lacking? And I'd sit them down and explain how all the mechanics worked and whatnot. it was difficult to rebel when they just accepted everything. It was hard to have such a loving, supportive family.
Mom, listen here. The games are terrible. Like, the story, it's lacking. Don't get me this hog's trollop anymore.
And then they cut away to a Conway Twitty.
A Conway upon Twitty.
Yeah. That's a Josh Strife Hayes as Stewie joke for any of the people that didn't get that.
Yeah, Andrew, please edit that entire scene so Josh is
Andrew,
Conway
please
Twitty.
Make Josh's head... perfectly football shaped.
Stewie shaped.
Andrew, please make Josh's head 20% larger than normal for this entire episode, but enough where you can't really tell. But
and you can't tell.
And give him like
just something
a few
off,
hair
but you're
strands.
Not sure what it is.
But you're not sure
just
what.
Have it slowly increase in size throughout the episode until the end. Where it's
I
much
feel like
bigger.
This guy's really smart, but I don't know why.
He's getting smarter from listening to these guys.
He's getting smarter.
Maybe if I listen to their full back catalog, that might happen to me as well.
Maybe my head will get bigger.
Wow, maybe if I subscribe to their Patreon for bonus content, my head would be six times
my
as large.
My head would be super large. Mommy, look how big my head is getting from listening to Beat Boys.
Thank you for letting me play Manhunt, Mommy.
Thank you, Mommy,
look
for letting
head.
Me watch Beat Boys. More Beef Boys for my growing healthy boy.
Speaking of virtual freedom, Josh, massively multiplayering online ing games.
You ever heard of those
what
before?
Ing.
Yeah,
I've played my fair share of Mamorpagus.
You ever heard of them shit?
What would you like to know about the MMORPG? That's one thing I know a little bit about.
What does the M stand for, and why did they put it in twice?
What does the M stand for? Why did they put it in twice? Many, many. It's actually many men online role-playing
many
girls.
Many men.
Many men. Yeah, they're really, really big 50 Cent fans.
Yeah.
Man.
Many men online
role-playing girls. That's how you get free stuff in games.
Yeah,
role-playing girls. Yeah, that's accurate.
It's like a shirt that was like someone would sell on a cafe for a store in 2012.
You could probably buy that shirt in game right now.
Yeah, in game. Yeah, right next to the Rick and Morty Master Chief collab.
You know, so I'm a huge MMO fan. That's how I found Josh's channel all these many moons ago, and I just binged like fucking half your worst MMO ever series, which is a brilliant series, by the way. And then my friend sent me a clip from your Josh Josh Says channel where you said you've been watching my videos, and I was like, what the fuck?
Because I just found been watching you through Josh Drive Maze.
No, I really appreciate that. See, what happened was when I discovered your videos, Kudos, was someone sent me one of your videos, and I thought, oh, this guy's, you know, really good at editing. He's got good presentation skills.
He's
and then
really
you started getting into the video, and I thought, he's, oh, he's so really
sexy.
Funny. He's really good at writing. He's really good at entertaining. And then
he's
you mentioned that
penis.
You're going to make MMO videos, and I thought, you son of a bitch.
I'm beating on my territory.
You're stepping into my in this area. Territory. I'm not going to win now.
Yeah.
But no,
then
really
you plotted
it's,
to assassinate him.
It's still weird yeah. that the people that you grow up watching on YouTube or the people that you end up watching on YouTube, and I was talking to a friend about this earlier today, everyone now is just a tweet or a Discord message
yeah.
or a YouTube message away. Even, you know, celebrities, even
King
super
Girl.
Big famous people. And it's so weird that I can, if I want to, wake up and tell Elon Musk to go fuck himself. Like, if I want
yeah.
to do that, I can
Which
do that.
Which you should do, by the way.
And he specifically
ago,
would
have
probably
have
yeah,
you'd have
should.
Had to found his address. It's so yeah. difficult to do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the first time I met a lot of you know YouTubers that I followed for a long time, there is still that kind of fangirl moment where
yeah.
you're a little bit intimidated to be standing in front of them and talking to them, and then you realize that they're just normal people who sit in rooms and play video games all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I think applying that mindset as a lonely man online to beautiful famous women that you really adore and messaging them, you know, one message a day.
Hello, beautiful.
To really look forward to meeting them in real life, you
yeah,
know, finding out
with
more
the...
Yeah,
sending
cursing them out and
penis.
Telling them to kill themselves when they don't respond.
Yeah.
I think
don't
if
send
we
pussy pics.
We all apply that. Fucking bug. Dude, I've had this gnat all day. Dude, this gnat, I'm sorry, this gnat all day has been, it has flown in my fucking nostril like 3 or 4 times. And it's like, there's no feeling like a bug, like another living thing
brain,
flying
bro.
In your fucking, dude, he's like Scrappy
yeah,
Doo.
He's gonna
me.
Hack the
he's gonna fucking turn me into live action Scrappy Doo.
James
you're
had one AoE
like
attack earlier.
It's just a gnat.
It's so fucking annoying.
James had one AoE attack earlier and accidentally clipped a level 1. Swimming
yeah.
and it's just been aggro to him ever since.
Yeah.
Speaking of MMOs, I think one of the most like supreme vibes I can ever imagine in a game, something about this just like makes my brain go straight serotonin mode.
Buzz Hobo Hotel.
There's a there was a brief while in EverQuest where you could order, I think it was Pizza Hut through an in-game menu, and the idea of ordering
Yo!
A Pizza Hut pizza in-game to settle in for a big night of playing EverQuest with your boys circa like 2000 is like, oh, that's
why hasn't GTA done that?
Why hasn't any other game done that? Yeah,
they should
yeah.
Do that.
I guess if a game did that now, it would be such a bad gimmick, and everyone would be like, oh, corporation, fucking, which it kind of does feel that way. But in 2000, yeah, that's sick as fuck. Like,
yeah.
But before the internet even loads in like less than 8 seconds.
Yeah,
and
you
can
order
it takes
a pizza
you 30
in a video
minutes
game.
To order the pizza.
Yeah, you're like standing
you
there
that?
Getting killed by the same mob 5 times
yeah,
trying
didn't
to order
like
a pepperoni
Japanese
pizza.
Wii's, didn't like Japanese Wii's have like it was like an early version of
they
DoorDash.
They turned into a big transformer, like a giant transformer.
Yeah, and
they
suck you
off
in your living room.
All
yeah,
Japanese Wii's are actually Gundams. They just like
yeah.
It's also expensive.
Gotta give you head.
I think
you play Mario.
I also saw on the 3DS you could like download. I saw a picture the other day where someone like ordered food at a baseball game, but you could buy. There was some. You could open your 3DS and it would be like, oh hey, there's like
Mario
because
Corn
of
dog.
The area you're in, because it had all that like RFID shit. It could figure out like,
yeah.
oh, you're in this place. Oh. Download this app here, and this guy did it, and it literally just lets you look through like the menu and order food like through your 3DS. So it's like,
what the fuck?
Epic.
Nintendo was just, you always see those crazy things like coming out of Japan where it's like, oh, in 1998, you were able to order fucking Japanese Domino's through the N64 with this random plugin that only came out in Japan and was discontinued in 3 seconds.
Yeah, you got to get the N64 pizza pack.
Yeah, yeah, the pizza pack. You got to put it into
like
your controller.
Yeah, it's like a piece of hardware. Yeah, exactly.
It's a full pizza oven.
What if you like walk by a kid
N64?
And... But if you like walk by a kid in the hallway and it was like four tater tots in his left cargo pocket,
Put in your kick because you're hungry.
Give me your
dick. Yeah, exactly.
Tell me what. Josh, let's talk about even most.
Some of your tots.
That's the most out of left field Napoleon Dynamite reference.
Whenever I think of, I was trying to just make a joke like it could scan food in your like someone you want. Right, like, okay. But whenever I think of food in a pocket, it's just fucking Napoleon Dynamite with the tater tots.
The same thing. You get your tots cake.
Oh god.
Well,
Josh, what was the very first MMO you played,
and why? Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, what was the thought process? Mostly. Take us inside
but,
the mind.
I think it was like everyone gets slowly drawn to MMOs because deep down everyone kind of knows they're depressed and they're like, I should probably start this early. Yeah. You know, get some.
Yeah,
of the
should probably start cutting wood.
But I think it was in high school. It was RuneScape, and that was because RuneScape. And I've made a lot of videos on this about why RuneScape dominated so much in the early days. It didn't need a download. RuneScape was able to run directly from the browser. And one of RuneScape's earliest competitions was Asheron's Call. And Asheron's Call did require a download. And most school computers or library computers didn't let you download any programs or run any executables.
Yeah.
So the fact that RuneScape could run straight from the browser was one of the reasons that it absolutely dominated both library and school computers. It got around all of those filters.
Yeah.
But me and my friends playing RuneScape at lunchtime, as soon as lunchtime would start in school, we would just run to the school computer room to sit down and grab the first couple of computers, even if we knew that it was going to be like an update day, and all we'd be doing is just staring at the login screen for like half an hour. That was still better than doing anything else.
That's like one of the most supreme vibes
I've ever heard.
Yeah,
did you ever have that? And then like the librarian or whatever would like kick you out because you were in there, like, oh, you kids need to go and do, you've been here for 3 days already, you need to go outside and do something else, and you're like, no,
you've been shitting on the floor.
Cool, actually, was that our librarian didn't really care, and what we had was a load of student volunteers from like the higher years that would help make sure the library was there. So a lot of my friends had older brothers.
Yep, still there. They'd keep an eye on to make sure it doesn't ever run out of the building.
They'd run all the computers, so whenever we walked in, they'd have a computer saved for us, a RuneScape loaded up, which was pretty cool.
Legends.
Aww, that's so epic.
Hell yeah.
My first MMO was Ragnarok Online.
There was lots of other MMOs that tried, and lots that died, and lots that should have died. And here's one thing that I tend to explain to people. You know when people say that music from like the 70s and the 80s and the 90s was really good? That's because you remember the good stuff and the crap stuff dies and no one listens to it anymore. There was crap in every decade. The strange thing with MMORPGs is the chaff doesn't seem to filter itself out. There is still junk MMOs from 10 to 15 years ago still going, and someone will walk up and go, oh man, that was really good. I'm like, no, it wasn't. It wasn't good then. It isn't good now. I don't know how it's survived. It's just kept going somehow because there's like five people in the world throwing all their earnings into it, and it's run by one guy out of like a shipping container or something. But
like that Coca-Cola MMO, did you ever play the Coca-Cola MMO?
I did not play the Coca-Cola
MMO.
What
is the Coca-Cola MMO?
Is this an advert you thought was a real thing, or was this actually?
No, this was. I played this game. It was a Coca-Cola MMO.
Duplex
it was
a Super Bowl ad back in like 2009. He was like, "That game looks epic. I want to play that."
It was literally you just have like a little vending machine in your area, and you just get like I don't even remember exactly the premise.
That's the whole game.
Yeah,
everyone takes turns going up to a vending machine in a void, just buying Coke.
Yeah, you just walk around like a little fucking lobby and you listen to music and just buy Coke. Like, that's literally all it was.
So it was like a Second Life sort of thing, but with Coke.
Kinda, yeah.
So it wasn't even it was just Coke. Like an online Coke themed experience.
Yeah, there really wasn't much like
progression
Coke
vending machine experience.
It's cooler,
wow, this
cooler
is
vending
just
machine.
Like real life.
Yeah.
When are we getting worst MMO ever? The Coke MMO.
I
think if you told everyone that you're going to meet up in an online forum and everyone's going to do some Coke for a bit, when they actually arrive and it's a Coca-Cola themed MMO, some
damn
people
it.
Would be disappointed.
Yeah.
Some would have approached with the wrong energy. You know?
Yeah.
I want anyone who's listening to this, if you have played this Coca-Cola MMO I'm thinking of, please let us know in the comments so I know I'm not crazy.
Josh, did you ever play
Everybody gaslight Doplex into thinking he made it up.
Yeah. Josh, did you ever play / when are you going to make a 6-part series on the Family Guy MMO? The failed Family Guy MMO?
Yeah.
Where you can play.
Assume that I'm not. Apparently, My Coke was an online chat game used for marketing in 2002.
Oh.
It looks like Habbo Hotel.
Yeah.
It looks exactly like Habbo Hotel.
It is. Okay. It straight up was just a ripoff of Habbo. It's fucking nuts. It was nothing.
That's nope. Wild. Yeah, it's a real thing. It's a real genuine thing. Hell, oh, the Family Guy MMO. Was that thing that, like, one of those tap-style mobile games that...
No, there's that,
like,
too,
the Simpsons
but no, this
had
is,
one.
And... This is, like, a full-on, like, third-person RPG where you could...
Does it
you
exist
made your
still?
Own
is
original
online?
Character, and it was based... Like, the characters were based on the different family members, so you could either make your own Peter... Your own Lois, your own...
Make your own Peter.
Your own... I'm not kidding.
600
this is
Peters falling down the stairs at the same... Like, when they started Vanilla WoW in, like, 2020 and everyone's waiting in line to get in, just 600 Peters waiting in line to fall down the stairs and, like, 200
same
fucking Clevelands waiting to point and laugh at the fucking
Peter. Make your own
Peter.
Cleveland Brown.
And I got Cleveland. Launched in 2012, and hang on, no, wait, what? It launched on December 2012 and shut down January 2013.
So a nice long run.
The Mayans were right about the collapse of the world. It was just the virtual cohog.
You could have watched every episode of actual Family Guy between the start of that game and... The end of its lifespan. That's brilliant.
Well, they were so late on MMOs already at that point. Like everything Family Guy does is late. They're 3 years late on jokes. They're 5 years late on games.
Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane is late to his airplane on 9/11.
That's right. Fuck. He would have stopped it.
I've always wanted to play it because I remember seeing a trailer for it and thinking that's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen. Like,
it just uses the fucking engine from the Family Guy video game.
It probably did.
It's a great game, by the way.
Probably does, yeah.
It honestly probably did, but like it was the clips I saw was, you get quests from Peter and, you know, Cleveland's all the gang, and you just go around and do goofy Family Guy shit.
Holy fuck.
For some reason, they thought that could carry a whole MMO. Yeah. Like, people would want to dedicate their lives to it.
Honestly, like, if they came out with that today, I think people would play it just, like, literally for the meme and nothing else. Like, I think it could have some footing.
I had a viral tweet about the Family Guy MMO. I think I said, sorry, babe, I can't come up tonight. It's Raid Night and the Family Guy MMO with a picture of it. But Josh, you started on
RuneScape.
I did.
I feel like tons of people played RuneScape, and then over the last, I'd say, 6 or 7 years, it had a resurgence. Were you someone that started on RuneScape, fell away from it, and then came back, or have you been 20-something years of RuneScape?
Oh, I left
straight.
As soon as they did the Evolution of Combat update, which was where a load of engineers sat down and went, we think our game would be better if it was completely different in its core concept, and then the entire player base went, no.
The entire player base
left, and then it...
Wait.
Yeah, then it failed. And then about a couple of years later, they went, maybe we should just do like a test. We should bring the old game back as it was to prove you players wrong. They're like, well, you guys,
fucking
you know
idiots.
What? Bring it back exactly as it was in the past and we'll see how many people play it. Turns out everyone was.
everyone really liked it.
So the evolution of combat happened. I've tried to log into RuneScape 3 and play it every now and again, and it's fine, but it's lost a lot of the core soul of what it was. It'd be like if Call of Duty became like a third-person parkour-style game, and they went, this is better. And everyone went, no, it's
not
what we want.
They did try that for a few years.
What we've come to love.
Yeah.
So I played RuneScape for a bit. That changed, moved away, tried every other MMO, moved back to RuneScape, because no one quits RuneScape. You just take long breaks in between playing it.
Yeah. I'm currently on my longest break, but I'm about to get back into it, because I just...
I've never played it. I've never
even spent
one time.
The vibes are too good,
man.
I love the music in that game.
I played it very, very briefly in high school, but I was into WoW at that point. And back in the day, like, I think WoW definitely... kind of blew RuneScape out of the park when it came to at the time, you know, because like RuneScape's this piddly little browser game and WoW's like this big epic thing or whatever you have to pay money for. But recently when I researched the RuneScape video, I tried RuneScape 3 and I was like, yeah, this is all right. It's fine. And then I tried old school RuneScape as well, just, you know, because pretty much all the stories I covered in that video that Josh was in were pretty much about old school. So I was like, well, I should probably give old school a crack. And immediately you're like, oh, I get it. Oh, this is so much better. Like,
it's very simple. It's there's a difference between complexity and depth. And I try and explain this to people. Anyone can make something complicated. You just put way too many variables into it with way too many things that interact in way too many different ways. But to make something deep, you only need a couple of things that interact with lots of other things in remarkably interesting ways. So RuneScape 3 is complicated. There is so much stuff to it. There are so many UIs. There are so many screens. There are so many spells, so many abilities. It's complex to learn. Old school RuneScape is deep, as in you can look and like understand there are three things you need to do, but you need to do them in like 100 different orders at any given time. And it's not overwhelming in the sense that you always know what you're meant to be doing next. You always know, right, I'm playing this, I'm doing this, I'm playing this, I'm doing this. RuneScape 3, there's like 1,000 things you need to do at exactly the same time. Yeah. Old school RuneScape is comforting. It's easy. It's nostalgic even if you've never played it. You sit down, you turn it on, the graphics are super blocky. And people have gone, why don't you update the graphics? I'm like, the same reason that you don't need to make every animated thing into a live action thing. Sometimes the medium that it's put across in
realism
is
a style, not a solution.
Not a goal.
And the style of RuneScape was old and simple and blocky, and it works really well, and it's extremely marketable and noticeable, and style lasts longer than photorealism. So old school RuneScape's got this very defined 100%. Style.
That's why I like
We've talked about this before, but
Halo is still a beautiful game, Halo 3, because it's all art style.
Yeah, and the just a lot of the older games, because you have less pixels and like if everything's very polygonal, so you're the thing you lean on to make something visually interesting is then color, which is when the PS3 came out and everyone was like, "Holy shit,
we can make
penises look real."
Yeah,
and they just took all the color out of it. Yeah, everything's gray and brown. It just looked like dog shit.
That's why, like, every time I see a new MMO come out, that they do go for realism, I'm like, oh god, okay, you're done. Yeah. Stick a fork in him. Even like Guild Wars 2, which I do love. I love that game. Mm. But I feel like they did skew slightly realer than, like, it's still very fantastical when you've got these like crazy, you know, characters and everything. But I feel like something like World of Warcraft, I mean, you can go back to WoW Classic. It's definitely dated. It's almost 20 years old this year, I think. Which is fun.
But it's noticeable and it's recognizable on the blocky shoulder pads and the
simple,
big
it's like the
textures.
Silhouettes are good and it's just it's easy to look at and so I look at other games coming out, even if they are like New World is definitely stylized to a degree.
Yeah.
But it's still like, is this gonna look good in 5 years? Is this gonna look good in 10 years? Am I still gonna want to play this then? No. But
if you
theory,
do style well enough, what happens is whenever someone else makes anything in that style, that thing gets called a copy of you.
Yeah.
And if you can dominate a style, as in you make the best example of it, you make the best game within that, every future game like that is going to be compared to you. And unless they're better than you, when they are compared to you, that's actually marketing for you.
Yeah.
Because people are going to go, oh, it's being compared to this. I'll go and have a look at the original. This was one of the reasons that Rift failed. When Rift, the MMO, came out, their first marketing kind of major campaign was a big poster that said, you're not in Azeroth anymore. And all that did was make people question what the hell Azeroth was. And then people researched it, discovered that Azeroth was World of Warcraft, played World of Warcraft, which at the time was better than Rift. And then everyone just played World of Warcraft. So ironically, by creating a game that attempted to not necessarily copy the style, but mention it at all, they increased their opponent's player base. So when you make something in a certain style, if you are the best, you become known for that style. And now you see all the MMOs coming out of Korea, which look like massive, overly stylized, you know, huge, massive, muscular men, incredibly slim, petite girls with massive, over-the-top weapons. They all
wasn't sure where that was going.
Tits.
They all look the same. And I can't tell the difference.
Giant Fuda dick. I think to that point, like you said, if you're trying to enter that like similar niche or market and then immediately compare yourself, you're probably going to lose. I think we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years a lot of indie devs finding success even more so than like mainstream like AAA developers trying to launch like new titles and new games and all this, because when you are, everything's already been done, and a lot of good indie devs will enter obviously a market that's already been done 10x, you know, the money, 10x the size, 10x everything, but you actually want to niche down instead of try to expand and be like, I can give you everything. It's like, well, no, I can give you a isolated, incredibly palatable and depthful experience, you know, very targeted at, you're gonna do this and you're gonna do it well and it's gonna be a good old time. Which
it's much more
you're
curated.
Spot on. You're absolutely spot on. This links back really specifically to something that I learned very early on when I was studying acting in university. they said that instead of being a pretty good dancer and a pretty good actor and a pretty good singer and a pretty good stuntman, just do one thing ridiculously well. Because if someone is ill and if someone has a headache and they run into the bathroom cabinet and they start searching through medicines and they find a bottle that says stops headaches right now, they're going to go for that. If they find a bottle that says kind of stops headaches, kind of stops feeling ill, kind of does this, kind of does that, no one is ever going to use that bottle for anything. Because even though it does everything, it does everything terribly. So when you do one thing ridiculously well, people will go to you for that. Like Vampire Survivors recently, one thing ridiculously well. Mm. And when you mentioned about people going into, you know, indie devs creating games without as much money, I'm a big fan of something called limitation breeds creativity. If you limit what you can do, you are forced to be creative with what you have. And we've actually got two excellent examples of this in film recently. You've seen the first Deadpool film?
Yes.
You know
yes.
at the very end when he says, where are the guns? And they realize they were in the back of the taxi and he kind of gets annoyed and then there's like a big melee fist fight at the end.
Yeah.
That was because they ran out of budget and they didn't have enough money for a big gunfight.
Yeah.
So they said, just add in the idea that we left the guns in the taxi and we'll have a fist fight.
Yeah.
And when they were making the film Joker, they just kept reducing Joker's budget just down and down and down and down and down. And eventually they couldn't really afford any big set pieces. So they had to film it in hotels, in the subway, on the street, in like a street bathroom somewhere. And it ended up being fantastic because limitation breeds creativity.
Yeah.
These small games are hugely limited in what they can do. And so they're forced to be creative within that limitation. If you give someone an unlimited budget, nothing creative happens because they just end up buying.
Was it called Star Citizen?
Star Citizen is an example of feature creep, just endless feature creep. Oh, we can do this and this and this and this and this. Okay, cool. Do one thing really well and then add another thing really well. Don't do everything terribly.
I definitely agree. And I also, I've talked about this before on my own channel. Like, you see that mirrored on the player side as well, where when a game gives you, an example I use is Outer Worlds. I love that game. It's from Obsidian. They obviously made Fallout New Vegas, which is considered one of the best Fallouts in the series. What I think they did wrong there, that they didn't do in New Vegas, is in Outer Worlds they gave you every single system that you would expect from like a AAA game in that RPG. But none of them, by the end of the game, you could spec out every single system. There wasn't, you never had to specialize in anything.
Yeah.
But in that, by the end of the game, Nothing felt useful. Everything just felt like you kind of got to the end of the game and now you just can do anything. Whereas in New Vegas, being able to kind of spec down and like putting a box around people makes players want to break out of the box and think out of the box and imagine out of the box. And whether that be through glitching the game, modding the game, or just playing the game in a unique niche style that you're allowed to take to a length that can support you throughout an entire playthrough, so then you can play it, you can restart the game again and play it in an incredibly different way and take that to the end of the game. Putting the players in a box and letting them have to breed their own creativity rather than give them the tools to do everything almost creates a more worthwhile experience.
This was the creation of rocket jumping from Quake. People realized that if you shot a rocket at the floor and then jumped, the explosion would boost you slightly higher and therefore let you make jumps you weren't able to. And when the developers realized people were doing this, they went, just let them carry on. We'll even put jumps in the game now that require you to rocket jump. This was an emergent gameplay thing.
Yep, same
that
with
we have
Halo.
Now adapted. And I think what good developers do is they realize the kind of experience they want their game to give, and then they really kind of niche down to make sure that is the main experience that you have in that game. A great example that I really loved is the remade Doom in, I think it was 2016 when it came out. Have you guys played the remake of Doom? Not the Doom Eternal, but just Doom. There's a great scene in the first level where you're given the narrative and the character kind of picks up the TV and there's a doctor on the TV and it's like, we tried to, and then before the doctor can finish, Doom guy just punches the telly, breaks it, throws it down, pulls his gun out and goes and shoots some demons. And that's the kind of game designer saying, you don't care about the backstory. You don't care about the plot. There are demons. Here's a shotgun. Go and deal with it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
You just want to hear the guitar rip. And
what I like about the idea of developers giving specifics within their game is they know exactly what experience they want the player to have. They focus on giving them that. And if the player wants to go and have another experience outside of that, That's exactly. Fine. People have done pacifist runs of Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, people have done, you know, magic-only runs of Dark Souls. People have done... They've played Dark Souls on a dance mat.
Yeah. And the people that do that in spite of it will find...
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll find so much more fun doing it in... Not necessarily in spite of the developers, but in spite of the viewpoint of the game.
The developers have put adversity in the game and then used the run. I'm going to do it anyway. When you allow
and it's so much more satisfying to find that adversity and challenge it yourself rather than them giving you the tool to challenge it, challenge everything. EA challenge everything. You know?
We should hit some motherfucking Prey Gunters.
Josh actually accidentally answered one of the questions that Deep Dick Pizza had, so I'm sorry we didn't get to ask it, but he was basically like, what do you think about complexity versus depth in MMOs? And Josh sensed that through the grapevine.
He just felt it.
It's such a massive game design thing in general. Anyone can make something complicated. If you sit down, look at a system and go, I have no idea what's going on here, then it's complicated. If you sit down, look at a system, spend some time with it and go, right, I understand exactly what's going on, but I don't quite know how many variations I have access to, then it's deep and that's fine. Chess is a deep game, but it's relatively simple to understand. Once you know what all the pieces do, you're like, okay, cool, I get how every single thing interacts here, but I don't know how to win every single game because you cannot predict every possible combination. Yeah. It's not super complex, but it's remarkably deep. If you want to make something complicated, just add in way too many variables that people can't understand, can't explain, and can't remember.
And
if
a crazy fucking
deep,
UI.
Add in like five or six things that you can remember and then find loads of ways for these to interact with each other.
Mm, I saw that in your... D&D online video you put out a couple days ago, like just the part where there's like 50 million different skills and there's like traits, racial traits, class traits and all this. But like those systems would be really cool if they were introduced over time, because like that's always fun in a game when you get to like level 20 and you're like, I feel like I've seen pretty much all the systems this game has, and then all of a sudden the game's like, boom, here's another thing. And you're like, oh wow, this is cool. Now it's something else to get my head around, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how one of my favorite old games, Soul Reaver, on the PlayStation 1, does it. Legacy of Kain, Soul Reaver, every time you defeat a boss, you absorb the power and get that boss's power. So as you go through the game, you slowly get more and more things added to your repertoire, your abilities, which
that's
opens
my favorite
up more of the game. So you start the game
that
and you realize,
cool,
oh, I can't yet go over there because I can't climb walls. I can't go over there because I can't swim. I can't go over there because I can't kill the enemy. As you do things, by the end of the game, you can climb walls, you can swim, you can kill all the enemies. It's suddenly much deeper, but it doesn't necessarily feel complicated because you've been introduced to everything slowly and you've had a chance to understand it before you have to go off and use it. Dungeons & Dragons Online is remarkably deep. The problem is it's presented in a complex way. Had it have been presented in a much simpler, easier way, giving you one thing, then letting you use it, another thing, letting you use it, and then by the time you've played for like 10 hours, you're like, oh yeah, I've used all 100 things. I know what each thing now does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's why you see a lot of games like, I was just playing God of War Ragnarok and Jedi Survivor, and both of them do a thing where basically they reuse parts of the map from that you've already traversed throughout the game, and you can see, you know, in God of War... this door sealed by a big fucking blue rhomboid or whatever, the fucking trapezoid. And you see that, though. You keep running past it, you keep running past that, and then...
The trapezoid boy.
You fight some, you know, I'm not going to... You fight some boss or some shit, and then it's like, oh, I get it. Yeah, you fight the rhomboid, and then you get the rhomboid fucking arm that you can put in the rhomboid door. But
there is a boss.
Or in
just
Jedi Survivor,
orb.
You... Yeah, like in Jedi Survivor, you see these electricity things, and... Somewhere near them is a red box, and boxes are usually able to be looted, but you can't loot them. But eventually in the game, you get the little fucking electricity shotgun, and then then you can go back through the whole game, and the map is now... The map now has a second layer of depth that you've kind of...
And that's what deep is, and that's what the best thing about it is. When people say, this game has a really good opening system, what they actually mean is, this game has a really good hidden tutorial that's teaching me all of its depth without being overly complicated.
Yeah.
It's easing you because you run by and think, oh, well, how am I going to get that chest? Oh, there's a shotgun. Yeah. How am I going to... I see that, you know, because then at some point you get a thing on the map that shows you where all the unopened chests are deep into the game. And it's like, oh, well, I can't get to this chest. It's on the inside of a mountain. But then you see there's a green shield door and it's like, oh, well, you're like slowly introduced to these things visually, and then you get to perceive them, knowing that you, at this point, can't even interact with them. But it gets your brain going, and then when you do get it, it's like, I literally can remember where every single fucking green, all 11 green doors that I've passed so far that I can't get through are. And now I'm going to go back and spend 3 hours before I go through what might be a relatively short main story and extend my experience by going through all these things I've anticipated for hours.
It's like the early Legend of Zelda games, when every time you get an item from a dungeon, you realize that the world you've traveled through already has interaction with that item you can go back and do.
Yeah.
The problem with MMORPG games is whenever they create a new system, they think, right, we have to include this system in everything a player could possibly experience. And when a new player joins, instead of saying, hey, we're going to let you play through the game and introduce you to all the systems as you would naturally find them, they kind of go, hey, here are 15 years worth of systems that we have slowly introduced to every other player. Memorize all of them immediately and then go and use all of them right now.
And then also, because we're embarrassed at the intro sequence, here's a free item that skips you to the max level for no reason.
Yeah, exactly.
I've said to people, if the intro of your game is bad at doing what it's meant to do, which is introducing people to your game, then you don't have an intro sequence. You have a small bit of torture that you want new players to play
through. You have
through
a barrier,
to almost
literally.
Gain the prestige to play the rest of the game.
Yeah.
That's the problem with Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, James is the perfect case example of that because obviously so are we, but like him coming in after we told him like how good of a game it was and then him hitting that fucking rock that is the
first. I bought it on release and quit 3 times up until like this February.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's literally like just a fucking, it's a barrier to entry.
It is a narrative fucking, like brick wall.
It moves so slow. But once you get past that, the game is good. But it's just like getting through that fucking wall that is that whole intro sequence.
You know what game does the opening up really well? I've been playing through Hollow Knight because I'm super excited for Silksong coming out soon. And I think that game, the way the map and like the areas are laid out, you have to, you know, you have to explore kind of the first bit. And then when you beat a boss, that gets you into a next level. And then you go through that. And something there that you kind of got in a third place will open up something that you can do over here. Like, the way you beat bosses and collect abilities, like, you know, double jump or wall jump or dash and shit like that, it opens up more of levels you've already been through. So you'll be like, oh, shit, I needed the wall jump to get up to this little, you know, crevice back in the very first level. So then you can go back and you just do much shit.
I think the consensus of the podcast is that we really like Metroidvania games. I think that's the vibe. Is that we
think
so.
I've never played a Metroidvania.
One big open world that described you can interact with an increase in complexity. Metroidvania, named off Super Metroid and Castlevania. Again, that does it really well in 3D would be Dark Souls. If you played Dark Souls 3, the first boss in Dark Souls 3 is called Aedux Gundyr, which is actually means the judge within the Dark Souls universe. And the idea is that that boss is judging whether you are capable of finishing the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Because you have to dodge, there is a phase, and then you have to parry, and then you have to jump. If you can get past that opening sequence, you've got every skill you need for the entire game. Elden Ring did it really well with its optional kind of intro section. And then you can pop into the Elden Ring world if you want to. But yeah, Metroidvanias of here is an entire world, take it on at your own pace, but there is an ideal path. They've done really well, and they will continue to do really well.
Yeah, I mean, so,
I always thought Metroidvania was like Hades or some
shit. Jedi Survivor.
I never understood what that meant.
No, that's a roguelike. Metroidvania is literally Jedi Survivor and God of War. Any game where, like, you can explore the whole world, but there'll be a bunch of parts that are inaccessible until you acquire an ability that will then allow you to traverse through them.
Go back and then open those
That's
paths.
That's my favorite open world.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night on PlayStation 1, you can go and take on the final boss about 20% into the game. Once you've got the ability to turn into a bat, you can fly up to Dracula's castle, take him on, and that's it. The entire game is done. Everything else is optional. So it's the same with Elden Ring. I think Elden Ring has something like 45 bosses, but you only actually need to kill three of them to get to the final
Breath
boss.
Breath of the Wild's another great
effectively
example.
See the end of the game.
Breath of the Wild.
Breath of the Wild, you can go right to Ganon if you want.
Like off-road.
Yeah, they literally give you the objective, defeat Ganon.
Yeah, which
and
is
like,
such a baller move off-rip. Just to be like, go kill him. Also, here's 100,000
kill the boss.
Yeah. It's like any other game starting and it just says beat the game and that's your one challenge.
Yeah, beat
the
game.
The game that I'm replaying right now for the next Was It Good on the Plays channel is an old SNES RPG called Chrono Trigger. If you play Chrono Trigger, it's brilliant. So I was researching into it. Chrono Trigger has 14 different endings. And the interesting thing about Chrono Trigger, if you've not played it, is you kind of travel through time to fix various problems in various time zones. And as you fix stuff in history, it changes stuff in modern time, which changes stuff in the future. But you can actually go and take on the final boss after about an hour in the game. The ending that you get after killing the final boss entirely depends on how much stuff you've fixed through history. So if you just decide to stop after you've fixed the dinosaur problem but not done anything else, you kill the final boss and turns out the entire world is now taken over by dinosaurs. If you fix the dinosaur problem and then go and help the wizard war and then kill the final boss, the world's now taken over by wizards. So you can choose how effectively history continues based on how much game you've done.
That's a really cool concept.
That's fucking awesome.
I've been wanting to play Chrono Trigger just because obviously I love... Because it's Akira Toriyama, like his art style, right? That's kind of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like... It was like a dream team of like the dude who does Final Fantasy.
Pretty much everything and then Akira came Toriyama together to make this game work. And it's been re-released and re-released so many times now. I think it's on the DS. It was on the SNES. It was on the... I think it's on the Switch now as well. You can get Chrono Trigger everywhere. And whenever you Google, you know, best RPGs of all time, it's always in the top three, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check
that out. I really want
to
play that.
You know what's a crazy Metroidvania I've been playing, or I played that I never actually finished, but I loved and did some crazy shit was Tunic, which is a more modern game. But what's buzzy about that is, and I love this, the whole concept around it is you have an in-game manual that's styled over old game manuals like you'd get in like an N64 And it's even got like the fucking ink, like you can zoom right in and see like the ink, like cross-hatching and shit as that was really printed.
Yeah.
And throughout the game, you find pages of this manual, and this manual not only teaches you how to play the game, as in the controls and stuff, and has like maps to certain areas. It gives you clues on how to defeat enemies, and it also has clues on how to find secrets, because there's shitloads of secrets in the game. And a lot of them are there because it's like the manual's already been drawn on by some other kid. So it's like there'll be like a little arrow pointing to like this one thing. And also none of it's in English. It's all in like this made up language. So you have to kind of decipher. Yeah. It's almost like you got a manual in Japanese or something. You have to be like, okay, what the fuck does this mean? You know, like reading through it. But what's crazy is there's certain things in the game that, as far as I know, you can do from the start of the game, but it's specific esoteric button presses that you wouldn't learn until you read the manual. And also to know where to use those things. And so like,
it's like Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give you an example from Chrono Trigger that I've actually just run into, and it's not a massive spoiler, but there's a bit where you have to go through a factory, and you get to a door, and the door's locked, and it says, please input the code, password, Zabie, Z-A-B-I-E. And Zabie doesn't mean anything to me. I'm like, I've got no idea what Zabie means.
Mm.
But Chrono Trigger is very much aware that it's a game, and it breaks the fourth wall a lot.
Sure.
And there's another part of the factory that you can travel through in order to get hints for what the password actually means. So I traveled through the other section, and at the end I found a manual where it said Zabie is phonetic. It's related to the SNES controller. You have to press X-A-B-Y, which will be pronounced Zabie. So I traveled all the way back to the door, stood in front of it, and pressed X-A-B-Y on the SNES controller, and the door opened. And I'm like,
that's super cool.
You don't need to go through the other part of the factory to get the clue. But that's also some cool items are over there, so you're going to do it anyway. But I really appreciate the fact that the game doesn't make itself difficult on purpose, because it kind of rewards knowledge of it. It rewards being good at it. I think Dark Souls does the same thing. It rewards your mechanical skill instead of just necessarily your numerical skill value in the game.
Mm.
And this is a big issue with MMORPGs. How does an MMO reward skill instead of levels, when levels are the main thing people get? And if you were a level 100 and you suddenly got wrecked by a level 3, would you feel bad?
I mean, that was a big thing in Battle for Azeroth. That was a big complaint, because the way their scaling worked was as soon as you hit max level, it flicked over from caring about your level for how tough the monsters were to your gear score, I believe. It was something weird like that. But it came into this weird situation where you'd be killing monsters, you know, in 30 seconds or however long it takes up until max level. As soon as you click over to max level, they're now like two or three times harder, like the same monsters you were killing before in the overworld. And so all of a sudden you're like, what the fuck? I've a max level. I should be as powerful as
the problem
as
was
I have
when
been
it applied to PvP as well, because it worked out you were actually you had a benefit in PvP if you were lower level.
Oh yeah, they try and scale you up to like balance things yeah. out. But then yeah. they overscale
the scaling
it.
Was
yeah.
totally
so now
wrong
you're
it.
Even more powerful. So yeah, there's a constant yeah. back and forth of that shit.
But the
too.
Idea, this discussion of design of skill over pure mechanical numbers and reliance on just your character physically being strong, it's very hard to translate that from a single player game into an MMORPG, because take God of War, for example. If you are good enough at God of War and press the right buttons in the right combination at the right times, you can beat it at an incredibly low level because you just outplay the game.
Mm.
Yeah. It's almost impossible to translate that to an MMO because the people that play for a long time that have max level characters, max gear, they don't want to be outplayed by someone who's lower level than
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
They want to know that they win because the time they've put in to play the game is a power investment. They win because they've put more time in.
Mm.
If someone else yeah. can come along and win yeah. because they've got more skill, it makes people quit very quickly. Because yeah. MMORPGs yeah. are a power fantasy for many, many players.
Someone from the Discord named Big Pidge, shout out Pidge, shout our out moderator. Pidge. He asked a real question for once. A question for Josh. Are there any older games that you would love to see a remake of?
If I was in charge of remaking a game, of sitting down with a group of people and being like, right, well, I'm going to remake this because I love it and I think it needs to be better, or I love it so much and think that we could bring it into the modern day, I would love to remake The Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver from PlayStation 1, because I think it's an almost perfect PlayStation 1 adventure game and I would want to change very little. I would just want to create more of it because it's great. I would like to see a remake or an update of Future Cop LAPD on the PlayStation 1 because I thought that was a phenomenal game. Before Armored Core 6 was announced, I would have said, we need another Armored Core game, but that's definitely coming out already.
Very
and
hype on that.
I used to be a big fan of an old RPG series called Jade Cocoon, and almost no one's played the Jade Cocoon series, but it was...
Was it
a fascinating yeah, it was kind of during... It was during the Pokemon era on PlayStation 1, but when you battled someone else, you had a kind of circle around you with three spaces on the front, three spaces on the back, and three spaces on the side, but the kind of corner spaces applied to both the front and the back and the side. And you would spin this ring around you, and there'd be like a monster in every position. So you had to spin the ring until you had the three monsters in front of you that you wanted. And then you would attack with them, and then your opponent would spin their ring and attack with them, and you spin around and attack. And depending on the combination of three monsters that you had, your attack would do something different. It would either add a shield to you, or damage to your opponent, or heal you, or put a status effect on your enemy. And because you had so many monsters and so many spots, the ring spinning mechanic took ages, and battles were really tactical and complicated. I feel there's a lot of potential for that to really go somewhere else.
Like,
but
yeah,
Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver, because it was phenomenal. I really want to, you know, work on. I think Croc could have done better than it did.
Let's go,
Croc.
I loved Croc. I made, but if it was an MMORPG specifically,
the Croc.
I always thought that Legend of Zelda would be a really good spot for an MMO because of the sheer amount of worlds in the Legend of Zelda universe and the sheer amount of variation within it. But I mean, a Witcher MMO could be good if people aren't witchers, if they are just warriors and soldiers within this. But as far as just remaking an old game goes,
maybe
no,
a Family Guy MMO?
Legacy of Kain, Soul Reaver. I'd sit down and do that.
Fuck yeah.
Witcher could work if it was like, if it was sort of like a hub-based MMO, you know, like with your hubs.
Yeah, the Witcher
like
would work
Witcher
in the same way that Lord of the Rings Online works. You don't need to be a main character from the books or from the game. You just need to exist within the world.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
a warrior. Yeah.
But you also don't want to have it where, like, you go out into the world and you see 500 witches running around completing quests because that also
yeah,
kind
no,
of kills
it shouldn't
the
be
version.
That. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Which is in training, that's fine.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
not bully.
Yeah. Fuck, a witching mode would be sick, actually. Or I was, when I was watching a D&D online video, I absolutely loved how they handled the dungeons because it was very much like a D&D dungeon. It was like, oh, if you had this.
Oh, they were great.
This specific
really
character, you'd be able to unlock this secret passage. Or if you had this character, you know, like there was a lot of
variation.
That's my favorite shit in games and MMOs. It's the reason why Legion was one of my favorite WoW expansions. I love class fantasy stuff. I love like, oh, my character's really good at doing this. Bring me along to your dungeon. I'll be able to unlock doors or I'll be able to dispel arcane sigils or whatever the fuck, you know. So like,
my character's really good at kissing.
Yeah, and you get to the kissing door. So stuff like that I think would be super cool.
Kissing door.
Because I haven't seen
character flavor is a good way of doing it.
especially with the huge like resurgence in D&D, you know, popularity recently. I mean, you yourself went to the premiere of the D&D movie.
I did. It was good fun.
Yo,
I would love to see a new D&D MMO like made. Yeah. In, you know, 2024.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Or whatever.
Wizards have very much dropped the ball on a lot of their video games. I mean, there was a Magic the Gathering MMO for about a week before they ended up shutting that down because it didn't work. There's actually two Dungeons & Dragons MMORPGs. There's D&D Online and there's Neverwinter Online. Now, Neverwinter is a better action combat game and Dungeons & Dragons Online is a better RPG. But Wizards don't seem to have any faith or care in their video game era. I mean, they remade Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. That was a hack and slash game back on the PlayStation 2, and they remade it for PC, and they totally dropped the ball on that. That didn't sell very well at all. They're making Baldur's Gate 3 using Larian Studios, who made the Divinity Original Sin series, really, and I hope the Baldur's Gate 3 is going to be good because Original Sin was fantastic, but I really don't think they have a lot of faith in their video games, because if they did, they would have tied the Dungeons & Dragons film launch in with a promotion for either Dungeons & Dragons Online or Neverwinter, which they didn't do.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, also dropped the Mario movie, which has they specifically didn't, but Nintendo dropped the Mario movie, which is now like the highest grossing animated film ever or something. And to tie in with that,
it was always going to be
nothing. They were like, go play Mario Odyssey from 8 years ago, you fucking idiots.
Do you think for Wizards, though, like, they, like, the real creative leads over there just don't care to create a game and it's being pushed by, like, you know, like, the business side of things? Because, like, if you think about all the really crappy movie-to-video game stuff that was made in, like, the early 2000s, there was some great stuff in there, like The Matrix Reloaded and some of the Lord of the Rings games were real great. But there was also obviously tons of stinkers, and people have pondered just why they were made in the first place. But I feel like it was just someone said, well, we have to make a game. I mean, that's just another avenue for money. But do you think Wizards like is actually being like, we actively want to, you know, forsake a little bit of our more tabletop stuff and create a video game, and they're just failing? Or are they
the
just
reason Wizards,
shitting it out? For,
make a lot of their games is simply to maintain the rights to them. It's the same reason that they make Fantastic Four films every few years or a Spider-Man film every few years. If you don't, you lose the creative rights to it.
I have a very weird specific example of that. Do you know that In-N-Out exists in Australia, but they only open a pop-up shop in Melbourne once a year just so that they can keep the rights to be like, yeah, no, we... Because I guess one day they might want to release actual stores here. But at this point,
that is crazy.
But yeah, once a year, the line goes around the fucking block for people to try and in
that's
and out
crazy.
Just so that they can keep renewing
they
their
can say
like.
I guess in a way that is business. That is the business mind clashing with the creative mind, though. Because
but with Wizards
that
of the
is
Coast,
just doing
the vast
it for
majority
no
of their income comes from either toys or Magic the Gathering, and Dungeons and Dragons doesn't actually make a hell of a lot of money for them as far as selling the books goes, which is why they are pushing very much into D&D Beyond, which is their digital thing online. I was actually at the Dungeons & Dragons Beyond Creator Summit, where they invited a load of people to, you know, video call in and ask the creators questions about stuff. And one of the creators of Dungeons & Dragons Beyond, or the creative leads on it now, I asked them if it was going to tie in any way to any of the video games they'd made, Dark Alliance, Neverwinter Online, or Dungeons & Dragons Online. And their response was, what? So they had no idea about how the video games even worked.
What is it?
Wizards make so much more money from selling cardboard than they do from selling either books or toys or games or subscriptions to their online services. All their money is in Magic the Gathering. So if you walked up to a Wizards executive and said, hey, I want to make a Dungeons & Dragons game. I want to make it online. I want to really give the players the experience they want. They would just say to you, can you sell a Magic the Gathering card of it? You know, the next Magic the Gathering set is Lord of the Rings. And the Magic the Gathering decks released after that are officially branded Doctor Who decks.
Oh, yes.
All they are doing, seriously, all they're doing is Universes Expanded, Universes Beyond, outside branding stuff, because that's what makes so much money. Yeah. I don't think Wizards even know that they have a lot of Dungeons & Dragons video games.
Yeah. They almost certainly do not.
News to us.
GOB10 and Bedfails asks,
shout out GOB.
For Josh, What role after sitting with us for a few hours, you've known Kudos for a while. What role does each member of the Beef Boy play in your MMO raiding party? The vibes you've ascertained.
I'm judging entirely off personality and off clothing choice right now.
Yes. You could do that too.
Okay, if we're judging off personality and clothing choice, if this was a raiding party, as soon as I log in, I would be the bard, and I would discover that I've got four rogues with me. rogues who are each running out with double crossbows and being like, all right, boys, damage all the way, just full DPS. Yeah.
Just, let's go. Yeah.
There we go. Defense is making sure the enemy's dead. So we're just going to run full damage. If it isn't dead, we try it again. I like the fact that if you were all rogues, three of you are wearing cowboy hats, which are going to give some kind of dex bonus. But we've got
Andrew's Andy, got the tiny.
I'm going to need some defense here. I mean, a little bit of defense, maybe helmets prevent critical hits, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I love the idea of me logging in as. I mean, I normally play a paladin because I like defending and not dying. But if I would log in, it would be a paladin and then four rogues just running ahead, pulling everything.
That makes sense.
Yeah, if you were like a tank healer paladin, like a half and half, that would be a pretty solid party right there.
Yeah, I could do that. I'll try and keep you guys alive and you just run around shooting and whipping things.
Yeah, shooting everything.
Let's expand on this question. What is everyone's go-to class or just tank. Archetype in general when playing an always RPG tank. Or an MMO? So James goes, like a warrior tank, a paladin tank, like what flavor do you like to go?
As a kid, it's always been tank. As a kid, it was definitely like a tank that could deal damage because I wanted to be like part of it or whatever. But I do like being more of a, to me, more of a paladin is like a tank that keeps themselves up because their goal is to keep others up. So like, you know, like in D&D, I took for my tank class, like you can choose a character trait. I took the one where you could like, if you're within 5 feet of someone, jump in front of them and put your shield up for them. Yeah. So like, more of a traditional like paladin tank would be mine.
I generally go ranger stealth. I like archery and shit. I like being a sneaky little guy going out in the woods. I'll shoot a rabbit.
Sneaky little shooter. You do that in real life too.
I do that in real life. I sneak around the woods. I don't shoot Anna. I just shoot.
Andrew's got three confirmed kills, and all of them have been hunting accidents.
hunting accidents.
Oh no!
I'm sorry, officer. I'm just really bad at shooting deer.
I thought he was a deer. Sorry. He shouldn't be wearing the deer camo.
Sometimes deers are bright orange neon.
It could be.
Doplex, what would you? What are you in your heart?
Usually I'd be going warrior type shit. I like swords. I like I'm more of like a balanced kind of guy, you know, like usually any sort of this is the one that you want to do if you want to do everything. Which I feel like normally you know, like a knight. Yeah, like a like that sort of vibe.
Like a fighter class,
In games, if I can get a decent team to keep me alive, I love playing glass cannon DPS. Like, I'll walk forward and I'll go like, guys, look, if the enemy look at me wrong, I'm going to die. But if you can keep me alive, we're about to nuke this room. Everything is about to fill the entire screen up. I'm about to kill the mobs and the respawn before they even respawn. That's how much damage they're doing. You know, that boss's son is going to be born dead. That's how much damage they're doing.
I'm going to assassinate the devs. Nothing.
We're going full on DPS glass cannon, burn everything down. But I will die to a stiff breeze.
I think that's why I probably played tank is because my parents have played World of Warcraft since fucking beta and like Lotro and all that. And my dad was always that like glass cannon DPS like AOE, and then my mom was always a healer, and my mom would just heal my dad, and my dad would kill everything. Beautiful? And then when I was a kid, I would just like get on and like stand in front of them with a tank and be like.
I love the idea that when they met, they kind of looked at each other and went, "We need a child in order to play tank.
We need a tank. Produce
a
tank.
We need a third. Let's make one."
Yeah. Kudos. What is in your heart of hearts?
I always play usually melee, but anything with a lot of mobility. I've got like an air-cooled brain, so I like going really fast. So like, I currently in WoW, I play a demon hunter. Before that, I played a monk. I just like anything where you can like. whip around real quickly and fucking like the Demon Hunter's yeah. especially cool because you can double jump and then have fucking wings fly out, which that you just skip that half the boss funny. Mechanics. Yeah. But just shit like that. Anywhere I can move quickly and zip around and just be places and then beat the shit out of something real quick and run away, like I do in real life on the streets of Melbourne after dark. Next question.
Schneebles asks,
what Schneebles
any
asks?
Tips or tricks for securing a RuneScape GF, Josh?
Yeah, the inflation rate has gone up substantially, which means you can't just stand and say buying GF 10k buying anymore. GF. It's at least 25k. And if you're not wearing at least one skill cape, you're going to be outskilled by somebody who is. So this is a very important daily piece of advice that relates to RuneScape. Yeah. People always used to say, you know, oh, you know, girls always go for the douchebag guys. No, no. People, whether it's girls or guys, will go for people who fulfill a need in their life. So if they have a massive attraction to someone who can play the guitar, they're going to go to someone who can play the guitar, even if that person happens to be a bit of a douchebag. They are providing something that they want. So if you want to get a partner in life...
Yeah, I was going to say, did you lose a girl to a guitar player?
I don't want to talk about it, but
I don't want to play guitar players.
Work out what you can provide someone as, you know, value to them. Why would they want to spend their time with you? Instead of saying, how do I get a partner? Ask yourself, how do I be the kind of person that other people want to be around? Mm. And then people will want to be around you. You'll meet someone that wants to spend more time with you. Suddenly you'll have a partner. And as far as RuneScape goes, just do all that, but also have like a really cool skill cape, like have like a crafting cape or a slayer cape, or just be mod Ash. That will work as well.
One of those two things.
So yeah, you need to be remarkably rich, buy lots of bonds, have a good skill cape, and have a really good personality, which I understand is rare within the RuneScape world, but I believe in you, you can do it.
You can do it, Schneebles.
Actually,
and if you're looking for tips on how to get a hobo girlfriend, play Falling Fernie and have lots of couches.
Fuck, that's a throw, mate. Actually, quick Britain / MMO type meme. When I was a young boy, my father took me to the city. No, I really wanted to play Hobo Hotel. I did play a gay parade. This was before debit cards were like really commonplace, and also like a lot of online
before debit cards were invented.
It was 1846.
No, because my mum only had a credit card at the time. She didn't have a debit card.
We were storing our doubloons.
I know that it sounds weird today, but yeah, and like a lot of so having a credit card you could use on the internet was like a unique thing, and like 2000 or whatever. And also a lot of places just didn't sell shit online because of that reason. So in order for me to get Habbo Hotel cash, I had to get in touch.
You'd have to call.
You did, but I instead got my auntie in the UK because it was a UK game and you could buy the cards at like local supermarkets.
Right, 7-Eleven.
So she had to go to a supermarket, buy the card, and then email us the code for the
That's awesome.
Interesting.
Such a fuck that's around. Awesome. I did the same thing for fucking Ragnarok Online, I'm pretty sure. I had to get like her or someone else to buy something overseas. Yeah. Because New Zealand just doesn't have shit to begin with. So it's like...
Dude, it was a UK-based game. And I remember another way you can get fucking Habbo coins was you call the number and they charge your phone bill. But the thing is, since it's a UK-based game, it counts as a long-distance call as well. So you're calling this fucking toll-free number. They're charging your bill for like $10 in Habbo coins, and you're also getting a fucking long distance call. So like I would just rack up my fucking mom's phone bill just buying coins.
That's the lowest barrier to entry for a child to spend really money is. in the history of fucking society.
Yeah, it seriously is. And she never noticed. And I was
just
so shocked she never noticed.
Like, can I spend money?
Yeah, can I Habbo coin? Well, not only you didn't have to talk to anybody. It was just like a fucking automated thing. It was just like, enter how many coin you want. And you just fucking like a thousand. Yeah, it's
you should be able to get RuneScape membership by texting a number or by sending them physical cash in the post.
And
$10. I got out the envelope. I put like £5 coins in there, sealed it up to RuneScape, and just sent it through.
That's awesome.
To
RuneScape.
That's
a jackass.
To RuneScape.
Yeah, you literally could send money through the post, and they would give you membership.
That's so
funny. Hello, RuneScapeio.
Hello, Mr. Scape.
That's such an interesting Mr. RuneScape.
That's such an interesting like cross between like early internet. Like the computer is an insane piece of technology that we take for granted. This was like the early days that we are able to literally play an online game over the pipes with fucking everyone in the world, but you still had to mail money. In the fucking early 1900s paying off a debt. Yeah. Like,
fucking carrier pigeon.
You had to give it to a guy on a horse. He just takes it.
Isn't that somewhere?
I'll be back in a fortnight. Look out for that one in a few years.
There was somewhere in like Africa where the internet speeds were so slow, it was actually faster to send pigeons with USB drives than it was to upload files. That's something I read.
That's epic.
Yeah.
I wish I had a
pigeons
pigeon.
Know where they're going.
Yeah, how do pigeons know where they're going?
What the fuck's up with that?
Like, you just tell them, like, go to McDonald's and bring me cheeseburger. Pigeons like, all right.
Well, when we have pigeon strife haze on, we can
train
ask
pigeons
them that.
To do it.
Yeah, when's the Just Strife Pigeon channel coming?
Yeah.
Well, that's Amazon with their drones. They're almost there.
I'm trying to fund that with the Josh Drive Maze channel, so the funding is not going anyway. At the minute, I owe pigeons.
You know the ones, did you get these recently, that Temu thing, T-E-M-U? I think it's like Wish or AliExpress.
Oh, yeah, I've seen all the adverts for it. Oh, my God, I saw an advert for it. In fact, my partner saw an advert for it, and she came over to me and she showed it me. And it was one of those, it's like knockoff Wish, but the adverts are even dumber. And there's someone wearing headphones, and the caption was, finally. Headphones that you can see while listening to music. And I thought, what a problem we've solved.
Did it have Mr. Beast with his hand on their shoulder and they were crying?
Yeah, and they were crying.
They wear the headphones like on their face like this. Yeah. Like, I don't get it.
Finally,
I let
look
a thousand
while listening to music.
See.
It's brilliant.
See their headphones.
I feel like we're definitely in the era where all of the it's not even ironic anymore. It's just post-ironic. Like a lot of the mobile game ads you see on YouTube Shorts or TikToks or something. It's like I feel like they're doing it stupid mode on purpose. Or like
there's a reason
because
for this.
Years ago they figured out they
I
had the highest click through rate.
This.
Yeah,
they actually earn more from selling people's data than they do from selling transactions within the game. Yeah. So the objective is to get you to download the game, Christ. And then even if you delete it immediately, they've still got your data. So. It's not about the advert representing the game. It's about the advert being downloaded. Now, you mentioned about those crappy adverts. We've all seen those ones where it's like a running track. Someone's running forward. There's two like gates. One of them is plus weapons. One of them is minus something. And you run through a variation of gates and you fight the boss.
Yeah.
Well, there's actually now an advert variation of that where they take a YouTuber or influencer and they have them voice over the advert and they say something like, hey guys, I'm actually playing this game to see if it looks like the advert. So we're going to go through the gate on the left. And, we've upgraded. We've got a rocket launcher and all the enemies are now there. It's not the gameplay. They've paid an influencer to do a voiceover as if the gameplay is real.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And they're now going for that.
It's surreal.
That's awful.
I hate those fucking ads,
man. When is someone
going
to do something about
it? Yeah, we need to start sending them to the middle of the ocean. Just drop them off there.
Joey?
So, about those Temu things real quick. So I started getting shitloads of different people reaching out to me on my business email being like, oh, would you like to do a paid sponsorship for Temu? And a lot of it's a Chinese company. I guess they pay a lot of Chinese marketing companies
to
promote it. And a lot of the English in these emails was really like dodgy as a result. And this was around the time that all those YouTube channels were getting hacked. Yeah. Do you remember when all those were
don't download any PDFs? And the reason, do you know how they worked out what was happening? What? So if you name an executable file .pdf in capitals and then .exe or .exe in capitals followed by .pdf or something like that, it shows up in your preview as a PDF file with a PDF file extension and a PDF file icon. But when you try and run it, it's an executable file. Mm. But the type of executable file it is a Windows screensaver. But when you run a screensaver, it accesses a load of cookies and then sends all the details back to the person that sent the original screensaver. And then when they go onto YouTube, it acts exactly like it would act for you and automatically logs you into your account.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Like spoofing some shit. Like I've even heard
PDF
clicking.
Why don't people just figure out how to like fucking make a really cool fucking toy or something. Like you put all that effort into scamming. What, just go make a fucking cool Barbie phone or some shit. What is
just
why?
Do the cool thing.
What's wrong with you?
We do
make the
Barbie
next McDonald's
phone.
Happy Meal toy.
But in,
come on.
Anyway, so I was talking to some people about how sketchy that whole Tesla hacking scam was, and then immediately I get all these emails from like, hey, do you want to promote our thing on Temu? Click here to see the document or whatever, the talking points. And
Nick,
I've heard
here,
that
see my
you
pussy.
Never click, even if it doesn't download something. I think even just it being open in your browser can still spoof your login.
Yeah, phishing links are real.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I kind of find out those actually probably were a real sponsor offers. I wouldn't have done it anyway.
They're just,
but it was.
It's
crazy.
Just such a piece of shit website that even their advertising looks like a scam.
No, literally, and it was from like 10 different companies. I'm like, that's which isn't unrealistic either. Like a lot of. Brands go through different marketing companies, but it was just weird just
marketing
how
companies.
Many there were for this one really weird product I've never heard of before.
I got an email to my business email the other day that was the body of it was like something about a YouTube sponsorship, and then the subject line was the dead body has been found on, and then it does the dot dot dot.
What?
And it was to me, it was, I didn't click it, but I was like, damn, that is a motherfucking crazy way to try to get someone to click. Because sometimes you only got to open the fucking email.
Yeah.
And then, it grabs a bunch
the
of shit.
The graphic that they're going for.
Because everyone fears,
YouTubers,
God, what if someone's setting me up in
someone.
The Matrix?
Yeah. Dude, when I was working at Rooster Teeth, we got an email. It's funny because, I don't know if this dude thought, it was, an individual person. But we got an email to, the Inside Gaming email. And it was basically saying, we hacked into all of your cameras, on your phone, your webcam, and stuff like that. We have videos of you, jacking off.
I got one of those, too.
Because
I just randomly checked my spam, and it was we've hacked into your thing. We've got naughty videos of you. If you don't pay us, $500, we're going to release it on
an MS Paint.
On this specific... Yeah. Well, they didn't provide any picture, obviously. But it was funny because they said, we're going to release it on this date, but I didn't check my spam until, 2 weeks after that, and I was like... I guess it's out there.
Well, there's a video of me fucking nothing.
Damn.
No. Yeah. But it's just it's broken English. It's just we have video you jacking off and masturbating.
come.
I think what made that one scary, was it in the title or the subject bar, it said one of my old passwords that I used 15 years ago.
Oh,
I think what
that's
it,
fucking
but
weird.
But it's a password I use when it's for a website that I do not give a shit about. Like a website doesn't, that's okay, this is definitely either a scam or something, but I just need a password to lock, a second Facebook
kind of
shit or whatever.
I want a coupon for Burger King.
Yeah, that kind of shit. So one of those places obviously got hacked, and they were like, is this your password? I've got photos of you jacking off. And I'm like, well, that is my password from when I was 12.
That's my password for the sites I don't jerk off on. Stupid.
Fucking idiot.
Fucking dumbass.
Let's hit one last question. I think this is our most serious question for Josh from B. Kavanaugh. He says, Josh, who is the most easily edible WoW NPC you can think of? Now, consider their activity levels and their lifestyle, their environment and atmosphere, which would contribute to the marinade of their skin, and their muscle to bone ratios.
I also feel like Josh might know RuneScape slightly better. I mean, you also... You
That's okay. I can answer this question. Is it so easily edible as in I'm enjoying it, or as in it's just physically easy for me to eat?
Both.
I think they mean easily as in easily to get down. If you're a motherfucker living in WoW land and you got to cook someone up and eat it and enjoy it, who
Anyone
are you?
That was
what,
in
what,
the world
what,
tree when it
what
burned
NPC
down because they
enjoying?
Are literally just ash. You can just take a spoon and be like, here's an elf. Done. You could probably
have
to
taste
a family
good.
And be like, all right, cool. I'll force this down. I've got three things in me now. Great.
You can mix it into a potion.
Through the burning of the world tree, effectively what you've got is barbecue. Almost barbecue on legs.
Texas
that's going to work to you. So that'd be great. That would work.
Yeah. But let's say it wasn't an ash-based character. What would?
Oh, right. Someone who's actually alive, something that's alive.
Or... You're trying to get a WoW girlfriend, and you need to. She is looking for in somebody is an incredible cook.
Yeah.
And you're both
in the
both
film.
If they're looking for an incredible cook, then she's not only looking for what I'm cooking, but also how I'm cooking it. So it's going to have to be a case of like being on the back of Deathwing as they fly over, looking at her being like, just give me some time. Just wait.
Yeah.
This is about to be delicious.
It's the journey.
Yeah. And I'm going to do something here.
Put
it's the ritual of going through it. It's the fighting all the way up through, you know, Ice Crown, getting to the very top, having Arthur step forward and me being like, just watch what's about to happen to this, all right?
Let me cook.
We're about to take a lovely bit of steak. It's going to be beautiful.
So in that regards, who would you eat?
Yeah, who would you eat?
I think I'd...
Your mom.
If I wanted to just annoy everyone, obviously you try and eat Sylvanas because I feel the plot would have improved.
She's like rotting and shit.
The plot would have improved substantially. I think she's
that
done that cheese thing. You know where milk kind of, it's fine, and then it's deadly, and then it's disgusting, and then it's cheese?
And then it's cheese,
She's
and
then
it's fine
deadly
again.
And disgusting bit, and it's kind of back in the okay bit now.
Yeah. She made the cheese
Sylvanas
era.
Definitely. I do understand, I do know RuneScape a lot deeper, but if I was just going through Warcraft things that I would have to eat, Illidan's probably got some decent muscle.
Would probably be nice to cook up.
One
of his wings.
That Illidan
he's got
make
wings
a decent
like
steak. Because then
Andrew, put
I would
pictures
cook him
of these people
and
up.
He would be prepared. That's how it would work.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that. Good joke.
I like
and then
that
real
too.
Quick, while we're here, give us your RuneScape character you'd eat too.
And again, am I talking about a delicious RuneScape character or an easy to eat?
Yeah.
Delicious.
Just
delicious.
The most
well,
delectable.
I mean, RuneScape has an entire quest themed around fighting food-based monsters. It's the recipe for disaster quest literally has you fight an animated trifle. It has you fight a titan made out of Christmas pudding. It has you fight animated jelly. So definitely the animated Christmas pudding titan, I think, would be a great thing to try.
That sounds like a good meal. I think
that's a good
fine
is this
fair
British
RuneScape
pudding?
Girlfriend is gonna give you some sweet top for that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
is this British pudding or normal pudding?
It's Christmas pudding.
Well,
it's Christmas
I think it's definitely British pudding because it's beige and contains some kind of raisin. All British food is beige.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
Yeah, that makes sense. British.
Last question.
I'm so proud of myself for eating diarrhea, and I'm so happy I had diarrhea in my stomach, and I hope you enjoy watching me eat my diarrhea.
Hold on.
What's that guy's
name? I got the last question.
Okay. Oh, wait, I did have a question.
Oh, wait. Okay, then. James says, I have the second last question.
No, you do it. You do it.
Josh.
I just had a... You do it.
What do you order when you go to the fish and chip shop?
Okay, you can't just spring a complicated question on me like that because British fish and chips. Look, England did this amazing thing. We conquered the entire world. We had access to every herb, every spice, every culture, every type of food, and we went potato. That's how it's going to work. That's what we're building the majority of our
Tater.
Food around. It's going to be beige. So when you go to the fish
and
chip shop,
if
you ask for a small chips, you get a massive pile of chips.
Yeah.
If you ask for a large chips, nobody actually knows what happens because nobody has ever had to ask for a large chips
no
from any chip shop ever. I think they give you the shop.
They're not American.
Yeah,
I think
they
that's
just
how
hand
you
over
work
the
at the shop and that's how fish and chip shops get
shop.
Handed down.
You become King
you ask,
Charles.
You
take you over.
You ask for a steak and egg pie. You ask for a chicken and onion pie if you need one. You ask for a battered sausage. You ask for a small haddock. You ask for a small chips, you get home, you open all the packages from all the paper, and you realize, this is a fuck ton of beige. You eat about a quarter of it, and then you say to yourself, I'm going to put this in the fridge and have it the next day. So you put it in the fridge, you come back, you don't have it the next day, because it's absolutely disgusting. Even if you put it back in the oven, put it in the air fryer, stick it in the microwave, it's just nasty. So you throw the vast majority of it away, swear to never do it again, and have a fish and chips in 2 weeks' time.
That is
very nice. Well,
there's the fish and chips experience.
We
got to
rise up
to
the UK.
The same here.
Yeah, we go on.
You're gay. You put vinegar on your fish and chip?
Of course you do. You've got to put salt and vinegar on it. But you got to
put
I had this thing as a kid where every time I would look at the person serving me and I'd go, could you please put the vinegar on first so the salt sticks? Because if you put the salt on first, the vinegar will wash it off. And I was just convinced that the vinegar would just rinse the salt off the chips, and then I would just have vinegar sticks. You needed the vinegar on first so the salt sticks on top.
I mean,
a couple of years later.
You were onto something.
As a kid, I was just so insistent. I knew in my mind it had to be this order. And then many years later, turns out, obviously, everyone's a little bit autistic. And I think that's probably why I was so insistent.
Amen, brother.
Wait, does anywhere else in the world have chicken salt? Or is that just an Australia thing?
What I have no idea. Chicken salt.
They just grinding up chickens?
Yeah, it's pretty much like chicken seed. I guess like chicken stock powder, but made into a salt that's really tasty.
It's like a it's like a bouillon, like a dried bouillon.
Almost. Oh, like bouillon and stuff like that. That's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But this is like, no, this is salt you put on chips. Like if you go to a fish and chip, or if you go to Burger King here, they have chicken salt on their chips. There's like the, it's like salt DLC. It's like better salt.
It's not that common, but I've had it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do be fucking with it. Yeah. That's like
the
white
chicken
people
salt
MSG.
Behind the paywall. It's fucked up.
It's like WSG.
Yeah, white people.
WSG.
Anyway, well.
White people MSG is just mayonnaise.
Josh.
If I had to eat somebody in WoW, it would be fucking, it would be your mom's box.
What the fuck?
If I had to eat someone
Josh,
in WoW,
to the
it would
top
be
of Spice
fucking,
Mountain. Fucking.
Was the journey worth it?
Conquered
the
all these wings.
What do you have going on? There's a
this
camera, there,
that camera.
That camera.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fucking.
Tell
us what you got
Josh
in your
Strife
ass.
Pays.
Yeah, what's your crypto?
Or Maze.
Tell about John Struggles Maze.
What's your number?
what's my number? Oh, the amount.
Will
of
you
people
be my
ask.
RuneScape GS?
Plus 61.
It would definitely have to be World 69 because that's the drug number. No,
oh,
it's been fun. It's been fun to be on. It's been fun to chat.
Yeah,
it's been
thanks.
Fun to talk about games. And I think what a lot of people forget is that ultimately, games are they're fun. They're silly, and we all have great memories of playing them as a kid. We have great. I'm trying to move house recently, and we've had a lot of estate agents come around, and all the estate agents say to me, "Oh, what'd you do?" And I say, "I work on YouTube, make videos about video games." And everyone has said to me, "Oh, yeah, I stopped playing games. You know, when I was a kid, I played them and I stopped." And
I stopped
like,
having
why?
Fun.
Yeah,
I started
fun.
Hating
that
my life.
Single tear runs down their
but
face.
No, what I like is there is a massive subset of people who still not only love video games but passionately love them because gaming is the biggest medium in the world. It's the biggest entertainment medium in the world. It's bigger than films, bigger than TV put together. It's massive. So, just love games, man. Enjoy it. And if someone loves a game that you don't love, you're not wrong. They're not wrong. Just love games.
Everyone's just if you're having
gaming.
Fun and you're not. Being
gaming.
You're not spending gaming. 10 grand on a mobile game because they're trying gaming. To tap into your synapses.
Gaming.
Good on you.
Incredible. Nobody can catch you. You're the real Rage Racer.
See you, Space B-Boy.